It is Free For All Friday. Monday, Wednesday, we talk apologetics and theology. Friday, anything is up for grabs. And today I want to share with you an interview that I did with the YouTube channel Catholic Christian. We did a short interview together on the dark side of Catholic YouTube. And so we talked about how on Catholic YouTube and on social media, there are Catholics who just engage in very, very unbecoming behavior. And it was interesting that I saw this creator's channel. I'm just kind of scrolling through YouTube, doing my thing, trying to see what's interesting out there. What should I talk about? What should I, you know, be learning about? And I came across this gentleman's channel, Catholic Christian. And what he was saying just really resonated with me. It was just so refreshing to hear that, to say, wow, I'm not the only person who thinks this. What is going on in the online sphere among Catholic influencers? Just the harshness, the stridency, the uncharitable tones, the lack of the fruits of the Spirit. It's really disheartening to see. And so I really appreciated what he was saying. So I reached out to him and I said, hey, I'd love to come on your channel and just chat about this because I feel the same way that you do. And so he had me on and we spoke a bit about this. So here is some of our conversation.
And I don't want to reduce it or limit it to Gen Z because I have a lot of Gen Z friends and supporters and subscribers, all that stuff. But I have noticed the trend, and I just want your thoughts. If you notice this trend and maybe what we can do about it, and it's not to single anyone out, but I have noticed a lot of Gen Z wannabe theologians. All they're doing, and it's in the comments, it's content creators, they're just wanting to criticize, attack, and prove wrong people like you and I or anyone else in the YouTube world. And they're literally, that's all they're doing. That's their end. So it's not a means, it's an end in of itself. And it's so inordinate. And I'm just like, who do you guys think you are? Because to me, people like that, the whole wannabe theologians, how many souls have you saved? I'm not saying I have or you have, but you know what I mean? Like, how many souls are you converting by just this hubris and the theological jamming down the throat? I don't get it.
And I think it can be done in a charitable way, but I think what often ends up happening in these situations, a person wants to lord their knowledge over others, or in many of these cases, abundant knowledge of a specific limited thing that they have become preoccupied with so that they can lord that over other people. I think it's difficult to see people act like that because, look, it's always easier to tear down than to build up.
Yeah.
Okay, so what are you, like, when you are putting out posts and things like that on the internet, how is this drawing people to Christ? Or are you just concerned about trying to one-up everybody else? You know, or the things that you're critiquing, is it really that big of a deal? Or is it just, you know, like kind of a minor point? But yeah, I would just encourage them to use those energies. Create something new that is your own. Create something positive to draw others, you know, into the faith. And know if you do that, people will offer criticism of you. Like, there's nothing wrong with criticism, but it has to have the right attitude and really be coming from the right place.
Yeah, constructive and not, you know, lacking charity and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so St. Thomas Aquinas, he has a lot to say about backbiting and revilement. And, you know, for people like you and I know I'm much lower level, but whatever. When we're putting out content and other Catholic apologists are putting out content and they're engaging in deliberate revilements, reviling against other people, when does it become our moral obligation? You, I, or even all the viewers and subscribers, when do they become complicit or implicated in the guilt of the person that's doing these things? Do you know what I mean? Like, how should viewers, subscribers, and clickers, whatever you want to call them, what should they do about these certain people?
It's a good question. I think the level of responsibility that one would have in these cases, like let's just say watching a channel where a person is very uncharitable, I think any sinful cooperation there is going to be fairly minimal. Because, you know, one viewer adds the metric just a little bit. It's not like a ton. I think you would have much more responsibility if you were, for example, financially supporting a Catholic commenter who engaged in profane, uncharitable, or in some cases, blasphemous behavior, and you're financially supporting that person. Then I think that is really something you should take stock of. But I think that the responsibility, I think at the bare minimum, would be that we should not amplify those sinful voices more than necessary. So if you come across a Catholic creator who is profane, who is promoting teachings that are contrary to the church, and by the church, of course, I mean what the church teaches, the living magisterium, not someone who has decreed themselves the magisterium and saying this is what Catholics actually believe. No, what the bishops in union with the Pope teach in contradiction to that, that I would say at the bare minimum, you shouldn't amplify that person without good reason. So just reposting them because you think they're funny. No, don't give them attention. In some cases, I have seen some of these creators and they've said things that I believe are really spiritually harmful. And so I will include them in an episode and then offer critical commentary of mm-hmm. that. And so I think that could be helpful there, but I wouldn't just amplify them just to increase their reach without critical commentary, constructive and charitable critical commentary. I would say though, if you know that of a creator, yeah, you might just want to avoid their material unless you have good reason. So like I got to watch everything that's out there. It just comes with my job. Yeah. You know, and there's low lives and degenerates across all theologies and atheologies and non-religious people. I got to watch it all because I got to comment on a lot of different stuff. But for many other people, if it's garbage out there, if you watch it, especially if you subscribe, it's like, well, you're supporting them. You don't have to support garbage. You can just, there's a million other positive things you could be doing with your life than listening to theological garbage. And you should really take seriously, focusing your attentions on that rather than the other stuff.
Yeah, I agree. And like you, I'm inundated with this stuff because this is a part of our career, you know, and, yeah. You know, we got to watch what's going on for various reasons. So like if I were to go on one of these channels that we're alluding to, it's not necessarily that I'm supporting and or getting pleasure from this. It's kind of like I'm collecting data. I know that sounds kind of bad, but it's like I'm collecting data.
I agree.
I'm observing, right? What is
going on?
Well,
it's like my library, half my library are heretical books. Not because I support heresy, but I have to know the heresies in order to refute them. So it's the same with things that are out there. You know, by the way, it's funny. I know some people will say, ugh, I can't stand this tone policing. That they'll make this idea that you're tone policing or you're henpecking other people by saying they shouldn't be profane and abusive. You know, just saying, even some profanity. And I did an episode on, you know, should saints swear, you know, should commenters be out swearing, where even some profanity in an isolated case can be merited in the situation. I'm talking about profanities lobbed at someone to really abuse them and belittle that person and attack them in that way. I mean, Jesus said, whoever calls his brother Raka a fool will be, you know, guilty of the fires of Gehenna. No one takes that. They don't want to take that seriously. But Jesus makes that very clear there. So what's funny to me is people will accuse me of tone policing. I can't believe you're telling people what they can and can't say. To which I would respond, so are you telling me what I can and can't say?
Yeah.
You are literally doing the same thing. Either just be a man, relax, and let people have their say, or police everybody. But don't act like that you're exempt from legitimate criticism.
Right. And you know, what I've also noticed, and you could probably speak to this too, is a lot of these men, right, that are really pushing this masculinity, especially within the faith, right? And kind of downplaying the femininity.
it's like sea anemone.
Yeah.
Those phenenemies at the bottom of the ocean. Yeah, right. Femininity, correct.
Yeah. And really what I think is it's a projection of really a lack of true masculinity. And they're trying to make up for it by attacking and bringing other men down and saying that you're being feminine by, you know, your tone policing and your tolerance and, you know, your charity and your ecumenism and all this stuff. You know, I don't know how you feel about that, but
the church is
a mother, and the maternal dimension precedes the Petrine. So when it comes to the feminine, hey, we are the bride.
And God himself is described as like a nursing mother who will care for his children under his wing. Jesus even says, I long to gather you together like a mother hen gathers her young. So this idea, it starts to get into a weird idea of like masculine good, feminine bad, which is like a Gnostic or ancient heresy. We just say you know, they're both good. They're just different and have their proper roles for individuals. Yeah. But this idea of like pushing a very particular and narrow idea of masculinity, that I would say, who are the most masculine role models in our faith? When I think of like Venerable Fulton Sheen, St. Francis de Sales, Pope St. John Paul II, they would be aghast at the things I hear some of these creators in the name of so-called masculinity saying and doing and treating other people. They'd be absolutely aghast. And I don't know anyone who would say that Pope St. John Paul II was not masculine, Venerable Fulton Sheen. And those are among clergy. But then you can also just pick examples of people just in general, even our own personal lives. Like, frankly, the people that I know in my life who are the most masculine don't talk about masculinity a lot.
Right.
I think if you have to constantly talk about how you're masculine, it just seems kind of weird to me. Like, you just, it's like people who, it's like, what was it? It's like Andrew Tate the other day had some, he did some X post and he said something like, the whole world is talking about how cool and awesome I am. Like, you know, people who are cool and awesome don't say, they don't say out loud they're cool and awesome.
Yeah.
That's like literally, I have a hard time even believing that Tate writes these posts, because they really sound like something a 12-year-old would come up with.
Yeah.
But maybe that's the age he's psychologically stuck at.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, the guy that tries too hard and who's desperate at trying to get the woman, you know, I'm a man and I'm this and I'm that. But it was funny you mentioned, like, you know, if you're the best, you don't need to say it to people. Like,
absolutely,
I remember, again, this is, I don't get into sports on these channels, but whatever. LeBron James said he was the GOAT back when he beat the Warriors in game 7 and all that.
Yeah.
And Michael Jordan's like, I've never, ever said I'm the GOAT. And we all know he's the GOAT because he doesn't have to say he's the GOAT.
Your reputation precedes you, and it should be a good reputation. Now, I will say it's interesting, though. I think the problem is, though, that a lot of them do have fair points of criticism. Like, so there are people on the left in the church who say that I am uncharitable because I'll speak blunt truths. Like, I'll say transgender identity is a mental disorder. Sodomy is a perverted act. Abortion is murder. So there's not like you're either these alpha bros who are really profane and abusive, or this like smarmy, you know, on the left in the church that's unwilling to say anything. It's not those two extremes. Like, you can be assertive. Like, I remember in my debate with Destiny and Jasmine on prostitution and all that stuff. I don't know if you have to bleep that so your channel doesn't get dinged or whatever, but on the adult explicit behaviors, I said he was insane right to his face. You know, you can be assertive with people, but you can do that without having to be aggressive, and certainly without having to be abusive.
Well, and it helps that you're face to face with him. There's a context that has been established, a rapport that's been established.
Yeah.
It was, you know what I mean? And that goes back to righteous indignation with, you know, everyone wants to say, well, yeah, you know, Christ flipped over tables, so that gives them the right to just go online and just blast people and just label it as righteous indignation. And it's like, well, I don't think you would go into the church and flip pews over and say, I'm doing that because Jesus did that, just because they're selling rosaries in the,
you know, what's interesting there, though. I mean, he attacked things. I mean, it's a little debated about whether he attacked people. He drove them out. But Jesus didn't go up and just sock people in the face. Jesus didn't go up to them and say, your mother's a whore. Like, Jesus, at best, he attacked the evil actual objects, the tables, the money lending apparatuses. Yeah. And he wanted these people just to leave where he was. Like, he just forcibly relocated them. But people take from that is, oh, Jesus did something that was aggressive, therefore I can do anything that's aggressive to people who are wrong. And that is just, you've isolated Jesus to one particular moment in his ministry against the major teachings that Jesus constantly gives. And not even that, like, the people who say that you can be profane and abusive to other Christians and cruel or malicious, I just really wonder if they ever have read the Bible.
Right.
I really, really do want, and a lot of times I'll listen to a lot of these episodes and I rarely hear them quote scripture, except for passages like, you know, Jesus flipping over the tables. Like, because when, like, in my episode on swearing, like, I said, look, it's just obvious what Paul says in Ephesians, for example, what he says in Colossians over and over, St. Paul, dealing with awful heresies, says you ought not be quarrelsome. You ought to speak the truth in love. You ought to season your words like salts. You may know what to say to everyone. And I'm like, are you just going to just pretend that this doesn't exist in Scripture?
Right. Yeah, they like to take those isolated verses out of context to justify what they're doing, when I think the most important verse when it comes to stuff like this is, be shrewd as serpents and innocent as doves.
Yes, that's Matthew 10:16.
That is prudence personified.
Yeah,
that's what exactly. He's talking about. Just because it's true doesn't mean you have to say it. Just because it's true doesn't mean you have to do it. You have to think about the context. Is this prudent? How is this going to affect my audience? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And people don't think with prudence these days. I'm sorry, they just don't.
Father Gregory Pyne has a great book on that, by the way, on the virtue of prudence. So I'd highly recommend that for your listeners.
Oh yeah, do you get a kickback for that or what?
No, it was just right. It was just on the I noticed it was on my coffee table actually earlier this morning. But what's funny is I'm thinking about doing another episode on how to not be a weird religious person, and basically it just comes down to cultivating very specific virtues, and I would put those as like prudence would definitely be one of them. Empathy would just be another. Of you don't want to go overboard, but if you can understand, like, oh, this other person feels X probably, that'll go a long way in helping you to relate to that person and not come off as a weirdo.
Right. And just, I mean, St. Paul, you know, we put on the mind of Christ. I mean,
right.
Literally, that's what we should be doing, and looking at people with the mind of Christ.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. How did Christ look at people? He didn't look at them as objects. He didn't lack empathy, right? He went to the marginalized, the poor, all that stuff. You know all that, but.
Of course. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you want to hear the full conversation between me and Catholic Christian, go to his YouTube channel. It's just Catholic Christian. It should come right up when you search for it on YouTube. And yeah, I hope you all have a very blessed weekend.